I'm Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And, you could settle in here and approach the far turn today. One of the things we need to consider as we're moving through the work, and I think I touched on this Friday, having to do with step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, where many of us run into some problem, the reemergence of ego in step 9, where any lens is now on my terms and not what was given to me. One of the things we need to take a look at and consider, we show up to step 1 willing to go to any lengths in order to recover from alcoholism. When we do whatever the sponsor tells us and we're out there and we're writing and we're reading and we're getting to meetings and we're sharing, going to any lengths each and every day. And then I move into 2 and some considerations with 3 and I start writing my inventory, and some of us who get through the inventory get into 5 and so on and so forth. Well, here's the consideration. The further I get away from step 1, am I getting further away from step 1? And what do I mean by that? Well, it's obvious as we move down the chart, as far as proximity goes, we're moving away from step 1. Step 9 is a lot further away from step 1 than step 2 is. But from an emotional and a spiritual place, if you will, am I moving further away from step 1? Or is the work driving me further into step 1 to see my need for power because I lack power? When it moves me away from step 1, what happens is I forget about my first step experience because I've gotten wrinkles out of my belly. Everyone in AA knows me. I've made a few amends. I'm starting to feel good. And I get attached to my emotions. Got to feel good all the time. Go to meetings that make me feel good, hang around with people that make me feel good, go out with them because they make me feel good, and I start to worship my emotions rather than the power that's keeping me sober all along. And I've moved further away from step 1. See, if I'm still suiting up and showing up and willing to go to any lengths and seeking his power with the desperation of a drowning man, and I'm still touching step 1 through this work, which will move me from step to step to step, as I move through step 9, I'm realizing I get to make this amends because without the spiritual basis of life, I'm living in or else. And I get driven further into step 1 with no power, choice, or control. And I need power. Need to do this. Get to do this. Moving away from step 1 is really displayed. It'll be manifested in our behavior. It'll show up like, I'll make amends tomorrow. I'll pray when I get around to it. It's only 2 weeks since I called my sponsor. And I'm not working with anyone, but that's okay because I need some downtime. You see, that's how it shows up. And then my thought life is manifested in my current reality, and it never looks good. Reemergence of ego. My ego starts doing the thinking for me. Instead of being moved by God, I'm driven by ego and fear. Back to what I opened up this morning with is my recovery based in absence or in spirit. And we go from starting off with recovery based in spirit, and now it's just about abstinence. In reality, it's just about abstinence. There's nothing to do with spirit anymore. My behavior resembles nothing of that. And we keep telling everyone, I'm willing to go to any lengths, I'm willing to go to any lengths, and I haven't visited any lengths in a very long time. Right? Really, the depth of my willingness is manifested in all my actions. What are you doing? How are you doing? What's it look like? When we get to inventory, lots of Chris talked about this. We right away get an idea of what this is going to look like, the things I'm going to write, these awful things about myself. Why is my sponsor doing this? We start to experience contempt, pride, and investigation because ego now needs to breathe. It's fighting for its life, and it knows if we put pen to paper, there's a really good possibility that ego and different manifestations of self are going to die, and it has to fight for its life, and it will pretty up a junkyard to take me out of that. It has to. That's its job. What I don't know, I fear, and what I fear, I dislike. approaching the fourth step for the first time. You listen to some of our contemporary AA meetings. You're not ready for that yet. That stuff's going to get you drunk. No, you're going to get me drunk. The fourth step will get me recovered. All right? What I don't know, I fear, and what I fear, I dislike. So I generalize, conceptualize, listen to belief systems about the work, about the people in the work. My sponsor's the greatest guy in the world. He just gave me a fourth step. I need a new sponsor. Right? And I don't know, I fear, and what I fear, I dislike. So we show up to this fourth step. Step one will move us through it. And one of the things I found, I share personal experience, what happened to me with step four, I was willing to do anything. I showed up to the fourth step willing to do anything. And I start to write, but I did it without prayer before writing, without getting still before writing. And so I would sit down to write and not write. I would sit down to write and say, well, that's not important. I really don't have a resentment with him or her, and sponsors shouldn't know about that one, right? Now, my first fourth step, I had, right before I got sober, I was literally living in the back of a filthy hallway on the Lower East Side. I was living on rooftops in abandoned buildings. I mean, I was really in serious condition. And then, little by slowly, I start to kind of come around, and I get this apartment, this little studio apartment, one of these joints you got to go outside to change your mind, but there it was, right? And it was really clean. It smelled nice. It looked good. I had my AA bumper stickers on the door. I had a thing of my higher power above the door. I had my big books, and, you know, it was like a little paradise for me coming from where I did. And I approached this fourth step. Now, I'm living in a hallway the way I was just short time earlier with roaches and rats. I mean, you got the drill, right? And I go to write this fourth step, and suddenly I think, well, I should vacuum the rug first. A little lint over there. And they always tell me to take care of myself, so I'll vacuum the rug. I didn't have a vacuum cleaner. You know, you sweep a rug, what that's all about, right? That took about 4 days to do. And so then I sit down to write, and he says, well, wait a minute, this is going to be a long night, and people in AA are coffee drinkers, so I'm going to be a real AA, make myself a pot of coffee, and I just be like this all night. And then I would say, well, it's going to be a long night, so I should make a little sandwich. So I make a sandwich. Well, now I need to digest my food before I write this inventory, right? And then I fall asleep. And the next day I would start again without prayer, without getting silent, using me to write the inventory, right? I would go through that justification and rationalization and never get anything done. I write a little bit, get tired, and close the book. And I start to get sick. And I went to my first sponsor, and I'll clean up the language a little bit. But he reminded me of going to God, and everything goes through God, and without God's power, I'm getting drunk. And so he sat me down, and I had to write a prayer. He showed me how to write a prayer across the page, and it's a very simple prayer. Father, thank you for the power for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral. My next instruction was to pray. Pray before I write. Turn into God for the power to write this inventory, because that's who's writing the inventory. My pen is a spiritual translator. And you know how that happens? When you're writing inventory, you go, where'd this come from? I forgot all about that. And when you don't want to write it, it's writing. Right? Searching, fearless, and moral. God's given me great power. And what my Heavenly Father's doing is saying, listen, you turn everything over to me to get free. I'm going to give you the obstacles that are blocking you from experience all of me. So here it is. This is what's in your way. This is what you've accumulated. Anything that shows up within inventory and step four inventory, I don't care what it is coming from the Creator, therefore good, because it's stuff that's going to get us free. The pen is the spiritual translator. Father, show me how to get free from this thing called alcoholism, because it's killing me. I need to experience you. I need your power. Okay, here's what's in the way. These are the obstacles. So when we're writing inventory, we're going to get disturbed. We ought to be disturbed. If we didn't, we'd probably be sociopaths. You know, robbing from mom and dad doesn't make anyone feel good. Robbing from our children's piggy bank should not make you feel good. Looking at some of the things we did should not be pleasant. It should disturb us. Everything's coming to the surface. All good. All good. But coming from the Creator. How do I get free? This is what's in the way. To uncover, discover, and discard the obstacles in our path. Right? And so we pray, and I would pray, and I would get silent, open up the book, and start. And what I did was, I would, sometimes we go across the column, a name, cause, effects, where I was at fault, etc. The shifting gets difficult. So I would write a list of names, resentments. Right? And the first time through the work has changed a little bit since, I've gone through the work a few times since then. But the first time was my assignment was we went back through our lives, our book says. My alcoholism started before my first drink. Went back through my life. And I had stuff on air when I was 4 and 5 years old, all the way up to my current date. And I just list names. Mom, Dad, you know, grandparents, Uncle Joe. My job was not to figure out at this point, well, do I have a resentment with them or not? Second column will reveal that to me. As I've gone through the work over the years, I've looked at current inventory to have the book, the work, meet me where I am, and list my resentments. God has given me that much awareness to list my resentments. And there's times where names come to me that I already wrote about, put them down again. My job is to not deny or censor the spirit. It comes to me rather than from me, therefore goes on paper. The pen is the spiritual translator. And so I make a list of names. And the last two names, every time I wrote inventory, the last two names I put down were self and God. I remember writing God down for the first time. I thought I was going to get swallowed up by the earth, you know. But it was coming from God. God knows I'm angry with him. Put my name on paper. It's okay. And so I would write this prayer out, get silent, and begin. And you know what? I didn't have to break for coffee. I wasn't concerned about vacuuming the rug or any of that stuff. I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote. And I remember I had a bookshelf, this apartment, my first apartment, had a sleeping bag for a bed when I first moved in. An AA member gave me a sleeping bag. And I had my big book and some other books and my bumper stickers, and I didn't even have a phone yet. And there was nothing in the place. But I had a bookshelf that I made into a desk with an old chair, and I'm writing inventory. I was in paradise. I didn't care to look at the things that was coming out, but there was something, a connection, and I knew something was happening then, but looking back on it, I can see how real that was. I remember I had looking out this little apartment window and looking at thought I had a room with the view, like at a little tip of the Verrazano Bridge. That's why I'm living high on a hog now. There's the Verrazano Bridge if you look closely, you know. And each night I would write inventory and write inventory and write inventory. And then when I got done for the night, the spirit will move us so long. We know we're done. Close the book and give thanks. So I put that away. No need to walk around with that. My fourth step ought to be disturbing. It ought to shake me up, to wake me up a little bit. But it's all good. Part of what the fourth step will allow me to do is get unhooked from me. Kind of unhooked from self for a moment to take a view. Our book says we're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. So here I am in this maze of resentment and fear and everything. And my book allows me to kind of like take a different view. Look at my life at a completely different angle. Why? Because I get unhooked from self for a moment. It's the first shift in perceptions that we really get to experience in writing inventory through all of this. It's kind of like walking down a Manhattan street in rush hour Times Square, trying to go from like 42nd Street to 50th Street. You're trying to make your way through. Or if you're in a traffic jam, you're trying to make your way through. Where do all the traffic people call the traffic from? Up in helicopters, because they look at things from an entirely different angle. With my life, God kind of lifted me up and say, oh, I see how things have been going. I see my patterns. I see why they reacted the way they did. I see my condition, this sick spiritual condition. God allows me to do that with a pen, a paper, and a big book. The age of miracles is certainly with us. Just the idea of getting an alcoholic to sit down and write and take our own inventory is a huge miracle. Because most people out there, like me, are pointing at you because it's your fault that I'm in this condition, and my book switches it around completely. The other thing I found out about writing inventory, and I wasn't aware of this the first time, it was about the third or fourth time going through the work, that it was pointed out, some new teachers were put in my path, and they showed me what really goes on in this fourth step. We have a resentment column, all the names. We have the second column, a cause. We don't write a story. Resentment with Joe, cause. He snubbed me at a meeting. Resentment with my wife, she always burns dinner. Resentment, mom, she was an alcoholic. Okay. To the point. Not resentment, mom, she was really a good person. I remember one time she took me to the park, and I really felt bad for her, but she was a fall-down drunk, and I didn't want anyone to know. I've gotten second columns like that. It's long things. And what happens is I become more right and you become more wrong when we do that stuff, right? So to the point, the cause, why I'm angry at the guy in column one or the woman in column one. Come to the third column. Got some areas of self we're talking about here. Pride. How I think others value me. No one should see me this way. No one should know my mom was an alcoholic. No one should see me with an alcoholic mom. You know why? You'll think less of me. If you think less of me, you won't like me. If you don't like me, you'll go away. If you go away, I'll be alone. If I'm all alone, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to die. So now I need you around. I need your approval. I get to see my attachment to you and opinions of others. I get to see by writing inventory how I'm playing God in basically every area of my life. I'm trying to control and manipulate everyone so I can feel good in here. So I feel whole in here, connected and one with God in here. Now, that's not the actual thinking process, but that's exactly what's going on. I assign you a role. I assign you a role. I assign you a role. I assign God a role. I give me a role. Now, everyone go play nice. Well, you should have said it a little different. Now I'm angry with you. How could you do that to me? You should have been quicker. What's wrong with you? And when I'm collision with everyone, everything. Everything with a pulse I'm in collision with because I'm trying to control and manage. I write out this third column, pride, person, relationships, what I think this relationship should look like. We should be loving and supportive and caring of each other, how I think this relationship should look. And I'm in conflict with you, so it doesn't resemble what my mind says it should look like. By the way, you're wrong and I'm right. Not really, I'm only kidding. That's a joke. Okay. Self-esteem, how I see or feel about myself. Here's what was pointed out to me. Again, about the third or fourth time going through the work. High self-esteem, low self-esteem. Most of my inventory is self-esteem. I'm a loser. I don't deserve anything good. I deserve everything bad. End of story. Call it a day. And my current sponsor showed me, well, is it possible? It's high self-esteem. I'm a step worker. How I see or feel about myself, right? Not necessarily what truth is. I'm a step worker. I'm a spiritual person. I'm caring. I'm supportive. If I see me that way, then how could you possibly harm me? How could you act anything less than that towards me if I'm so wonderful towards you? It's a setup for a resentment. Security, my emotional security, what I need to be okay. I need you to do exactly what I think you should be doing all the time. Right? How could you disappoint me? How could you do that? How could you say that? You know, if you're in a relationship, you know exactly what I'm talking about. How could you do that? How could you say that? Don't you know better? You know, it goes on and on and on. Why did you say that to him for? I'm playing God, giving you a role, giving you a role, so I feel okay. It's really all about me. My ambition, my goal, what I want. What I want. How's any of this stuff hurt, interfered, or threatened? How's my ambition threatened me a few times? And I was placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. A couple of times I got a little uncomfortable. first few times. Father moved me through this. And I'm no longer feeling dirty or without dignity. Miracle. So I know my God loves me. I write out my four columns, and what I get to see, and I found this around third or fourth time going through the work, what one of my teachers showed me was, when we look at what we've done in column four, us on paper holding a mirror up to us, this is me, manifestations of self, causes me to be in collision with everyone. It has nothing to do with the person in column one. The more inventory, you notice every time you write inventory, you have a list of names and causes. They're just changing seats. Angry with Joe today, Frank tomorrow. He didn't do this, he didn't do that. It's always going to be there. It really is what's going on with me. So what was pointed out to me has nothing to do with those people. It comes down to a couple of things. The first three columns really are a lie, but I need to get there to find that out. I need to do all that work to find out. It has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with me, and I'm angry with God. That's what it funnels into. I'm angry with me, and I'm angry with God. And from my own personal experience, if I dumped every fourth step I've done into a funnel, one word comes out of the whole thing, fear. Fear, the evil and corroding threat, fear. Fear in every area of my life. That's why I resent you. You didn't do what I wanted. You said something that offended me. Why? People are going to think less of me. You didn't do what I wanted. I'm losing power, choice, and control. Fear. Fear over and over and over and over and over again. Riddled with fear. Driven by fear. And it don't stop until it's ready. My choice in here is to be driven by fear or moved by this power. And I would write out the sex inventory, and I write out the when I was done with the resentment inventory, the sex inventory, a fear inventory, list of fear, why I had it, self-reliance fail me, how did I set the ball rolling, right? Usually going back to the thinking mind and listening to that, right? Fear of getting attached to an outcome. And as I'm writing this, I'm little by slowly becoming more and more and more unhooked from me. I get to see very clearly what's going on. I get to watch me on paper. And I come to step five. And the first time I went through the work, my sponsor, I thought, invented Alcoholics Anonymous. this guy was it, my first sponsor in AA. And the best way to describe this guy is, remember the show Taxi? Remember the character Danny DeVito played? That was my first sponsor. His method, the method to his madness, was to pull no punches. And he would use every earthy word he could to make his point. And what I've shared sometimes with guys I work with is what one of the lessons he told me, I will not let your illness interfere in me talking to you, and I will do anything to cut it out. And if it involves ugly language, I'm going to use it. That's what he did not care. And if you got angry with me, tough, go work with somebody else. You asked me to sponsor you. You know what I'm about. Gentleman was asking me before, getting people, taking them to the work. They got to go through the steps. They don't want to go through the steps. They knew what they wanted when they showed up to your door. They're not doing the work. Next. And that's what this guy did. I got to show up to his door at my fifth step, and I had like four spiral notebooks. He thought a lunacy commission should be appointed for me. But I remember on the way there, I'm thinking, I can't share all this work with this guy. I have a sex inventory in here. This is not good. And who is this guy anyway? Now, I wish you guys knew my dad, because my dad's voice started talking to me instead of God. You know this guy. You know, who's vouching for him, you know? Right? And I was suddenly went from God to Goodfellas in about 2 minutes, right? And And I hit my knees and I prayed, Father, what do I do? And I showed up to this guy's door and I began. And here's the love of God, one drunk work with another. How when we hear, those of us who have heard Fifth Steps, we take the time to listen. And we know how intimate and tender that is. Whether we have to bark occasionally, pull the covers occasionally, or just be gentle occasionally, we sit and we work and we know what that drunk is feeling. And we listen and we instruct and we teach the love of God. And I sat down next to this guy, and my current sponsor's done it with me, and I just do more fifth steps now, multiple fifth steps. And not once did any of my teachers in Alcoholics Anonymous judge me, like, wow. Well, that's a wrap for today, Pete, you know. None of that. They listened. They even anteed up about, this is what happened to me, very similar. You know, the stuff that happened to me was a kid. One of my teachers says, it is what happened to me. And this is how I moved through it. I said, okay, you know, the weight came off the shoulders. I wasn't so inferior. I felt less dirty. Okay. Somebody else, no, I didn't notice about him. Now I notice about him. And we met. See, the neat thing about the fifth step is we get to give away some compassion and love. Whether the compassion is, hey, Danny, you're full of baloney. Take a look at this. You're protecting ego, or I understand and I'm going to walk you through that. Compassion. Great stuff in step five. The neat thing about in chapter six with step five, it says we've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects and have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. These are about to be cast out. Now, a lot of our meetings talk about working on my defects. I heard one guy, I had to be nice because we're having dinner together, he says, I embrace my defects. I'm trying to imagine what that looks like when you're alone with your defects and say, come on, defects. Let's go have a healthy relationship. Right? We're not going to work on them. We're not going to deal with them. That implies self-reliance. They're going to be cast out like bad garbage. We don't let garbage sit in our kitchen for a month to see what happens. Right? Out. Goes out to be replaced by really what's already there, the Spirit of God. On page 72, it says, almost towards the bottom, it says, we will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If I skip this vital step, I may not overcome drinking. And what our book does is make sure we don't get too far away from step one, because it takes us right back to step one with that statement. And off we go. And what I do with people when they're working with me is I'll do some meditation and prayer before they show up. And I'll read some of this chapter 6 to them, that I understand why they're here and what they're about to do. And I'm honored that they picked me, sponsor or not. And then they begin. When I hear a fifth step, what I have in front of me is a notepad and a pen. And I let the prospects know, pay no attention to that. Because the way God's going to move you through this, after we make some prayer together, God's also going to move me. And I have no idea what's going to come up. But I get organized and prepared with a pen and paper. And I start to hear. And we heard this before. There it is again. This will enhance the experience and allow that person to see things clearer for 6 and 7 when they're quiet for an hour after 5. Oh, we talked about this way back with Mom. Now we're like 20 years later. You see the thread running through all of this, and I have it in front of me. I'll listen to what they're not telling me. See, I'm present at that moment after my practice to be of service to them. It's a huge responsibility. What are they not telling me as they're reading to me? I even go so far as I'm going to watch the shift in their body language and when we start talking about some things. Let's go to sex inventory. Yeah. My first sex inventory, all my inventory was written in block letters this big. Joe, he did this to me. Sex inventory, you need a magnifying glass to read it. All right. I watched that. I'm the teacher now. I need to work with them through that. And we sit and listen. And when we're all done, I'll talk about some of the things that came to me, some of the things that revealed to them. And then we have an experience like this. Working with the guy, this never happened to me since, never happened before, but I'm working with this one guy, and I'm battling ego for the entire fourth step. Get to the fourth column, yeah, but let me explain. Get to the first column, I'm mad at Joe, let me explain about the second column. Let me tell you what happened. You know when you get that? Let me explain, right? It's really his fault. And over and over and over again, and I'm like, I'm kind of getting to the end of my rope. And I says, listen, Joe, let's take a break. I go in the bathroom, I throw cold water on my face, and God, what do I do with this? I'm stuck. I can't get past this guy's ego. Sit down at the dining room table, and I still don't know what's going to happen, and what comes out of my mouth is this. Joe, all I want you to do is start reading to me the fourth column. Looked at me, that deer in the headlights, like, what? Loved the sound of his voice, so he wanted to read everything, right? I said, no, I want you to read just the fourth column only. And he started reading the fourth column, flipped the page, fourth column, flipped the page, fourth column, flipped the page, over and over and over again. And then something happened. I knew those words came from God, not from me. Because what happened to this guy, the guy's ego split right in front of me, and what came out was this new person. My words do an injustice to this experience, but I saw something happen to this guy right at my table. He got it. He was waking up right in front of me. I mean, this is great stuff. And he began to read the rest of the work. This guy has not looked the same or sounded the same since. And here was a guy who would find every single loophole in this book, sponsors many today, works with a lot of people. Happened right in my house. The words that God gave me. Some of the considerations, it says on page 75, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. We stop there. That's the first half of the fifth step. And then we start to read. When we're done, we have our fifth step promises. Once having taken the step withholding nothing, we are delighted. I can look the world in the eye. I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. How's that looking? My fears fall from me. I begin to feel the nearness of my Creator. Where I may have had certain spiritual beliefs, I now began to have a spiritual experience, and it may be the infancy of this spiritual experience, but it's there nonetheless. My own personal experience was that these fifth step promises, I didn't wake up to them or experience them until 6 and 7 and certainly into 9. They weren't immediate. When I got done with my fifth step, I was just, it's over. It was a sense of relief. I didn't know it was really liberation I was experiencing. We feel that the drink problem has disappeared, and that will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And when I get home, it says, I find a place where I can be quiet for an hour. The only time my book tells me to rest. And the resting is no rest. Because I'm going to review the first 5 proposals. If I try to sneak something through the archway, am I really clear on my first 5 proposals and my fifth step? Did I try to sneak something through that no one's going to know about? They asked me some questions. And what I did, and I always like to read these, is I broke this down. It asked me to read the first 5 proposals. Am I clear on step 1, 2, 3, 4? I've been clear with step 5. Do I believe I'm powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable? Do I believe I have no power, choice, or control before the first drink and after the first drink? Do I believe I cannot manage my own life? Do I believe my mind will take me back to a drink or anything that's killing me? Do I believe that my body is quite as abnormal as my mind, and that my body will experience a phenomenon called craving if I pick up a drink? Right? Do I believe I will still experience a strange mental blank spots without a spiritual revolution? Step 2, am I still willing to accept spiritual help? And if not, no, I will experience the bitter end. Am I willing to have God restore me to sanity? Am I still in that place of willingness like I was in step 1, down in step 5 here, ready to move into 6, 7, 8, 9? Do I believe God can and will relieve me of my alcoholism? Am I willing to believe in or do whatever this power directs me to do? Am I still convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success? Step three. Am I willing to quit playing God in every area of my life? Am I clear that turning my will and life over to the care of God means that my life is no longer any of my business? What an order. Can't go through with it. And step four, have I been thorough, or have I tried to sneak something through the archway like God's not going to know? They give us some questions on the bottom of 75, going into page 76 into step 6 and 7. They ask us some questions, a lot of analogies about the cement and the mortar, building this archway. And we answer these questions. And here's the shift. On page 76, with regards to those questions, it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. It doesn't tell me, what does your sponsor think about this? What does your home group think about this? How do you feel about answering these questions? How do I feel? Can I answer them to my own satisfaction that I haven't skipped on the cement? I haven't skipped on the foundation. I haven't skipped on the ingredients building this archway. There's the shift. They're saying, okay, what do you think? We're waking up. And if I can answer those questions satisfactory, it tells me I move into step 6. One of the assignments I've done each and every time with step 6 is get a list of these defects that were revealed to me in step 5 and write them down. And then I list the opposites: dishonesty, honesty; suspicion, trust; jealousy, trust; hate, love. And what I would simply do is make an offering, a humble offering to my Heavenly Father. Father, this is what was revealed to me. All the stuff that's been blocking me. Thank you for the opposites. Knowing full well that there are things in there that God is just going to tweak. There's things in there God's going to completely remove. But as a child, I offer this up and let him do with what he thinks he needs to do. Or just a humble offering. That for me is truly the humility in this step. Is, Father, this is what's revealed to me. I know I'm not perfect, but I offer this to you, and you do what you want. My hands are off the steering wheel. Lots of times in our meetings, I'll hear this with 6 and 7. Well, defects of character. I'll always have defects of character. I'll never be perfect. I'll always be imperfect, or perhaps. But are you telling me that I can't say that if God wanted to come down this afternoon and tap one of us on the head and say, from here on out, you are going to be perfect, that that's not possible? I have to answer yes if God is everything. Because if I say no, that's impossible. Have I just limited God's power? And I'm putting God in a box. I'm judging God based on all my knowledge and all my experiences, which amounts to a grain of sand on a beach. If God's all loving, all powerful, if God's everything, then is it possible that one of us could go out from here being totally perfect until we go home to the Lord? I have to say yes to that. That kind of sets up how powerful this God is. Six and seven, over time, has become my first step for life. It's what's left of the wreckage. All the defects of character that manifest in my life have caused a lot of my dilemma. Leaving the drink question aside, this is me, my defects. It was my first step. It was a surrender to what's left. This is my life. I surrender that once again. And I offer that to God. Do with me as you will. My first step for life. And we leave the results here to God. Well, if you're going to take my grow up in certain areas, don't talk too much, don't say too much, a little dishonesty is good. Even though you're going home, tell Joe you're going there because he may follow you home and rip you off. A little dishonesty is good. A little dishonesty in a relationship with her is good. I mean, these are things I was brought up with, right? I'm wondering why I'm having collision in my relationships. Never be totally honest with anyone, right? And I offer this to God. Fear kicks in saying, wait a minute. You have to be a little dishonest. You have to be a little manipulative. What's this going to look like when I get to the other side? Oh, my God, you're going to remove all my dishonesty? I'm going to be completely honest? What an order. I can't go through with it. And all we need to do is know this. We suit up and show up to the altar with a spirit of willingness, and God will do the changing, God will do the growing, and God will nurture me every way, and wherever I land, it'll be perfect. A farmer does the planting, God does the growing. A doctor does the surgery, God does the healing. I suit up and show up because of my circumstances in step one. Father, I offer this to you. Wherever I land, I don't know, but I know it's going to be glorious. Take me. Take me in the condition I am. I'm scared to death right now, but it's got to be better than where I was. And I had that experience a few years ago going through to work again. I get to step 6 and 7. And I get out of my 7-step prayer, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And I was moved to go into a meditation. And what came out of that meditation was, Father, save me from me. Because I will do me in faster than the biggest guy in the bar. Father, save me from me. What happened to me afterwards, like the words don't really sell it, but this is what happened. I started to feel like I was vibrating. You know that new feeling when you come to a meeting and you're just all over the place on the inside? That internal dialogue, you know, it's got you vibrating. Well, I was vibrating. I felt shaky. I felt like I'd never been to an AA meeting, like I never prayed, like I was raw right out of detox. I felt like I was dying. No thought about drinking, but I just didn't like what I was feeling. I felt weak. I felt insecure. It was just a mess. I pray some more, meditate some more, and I call up my sponsor, and I says, this is what's going on with me. And my sponsor says, it sounds to me like you're having an experience. Something was taking place in my home at the time, and I wanted with every fiber of my being to control, put my hands on the wheel, to fix the outcome. No matter how much I tried, I couldn't. I was almost forced to remain where I was and watch the events play out. At the end of the day, it was perfect. See, lots of times my solutions today are tomorrow's problems, right? And an alcoholic with a motive should be considered armed and dangerous, right? But I was still. And it played out perfect. I was put back together by day's end. And something happened to me that kind of went through every part of my body. I felt lit up. That experience I was experiencing was the death of self. I was truly dying the death of self. That's how real it felt. I turned to God, Father, rid me of self. Let me experience more of you. He said, okay, let's go. I was getting squeezed through the archway. There's a squeezing that goes on going through the archway. You know, you clean the sink with a sponge. What do you do every so often? Squeeze it, rinse it out, start again, right? Fill up the cup with water. We talked about this. Empty it out to be filled with new. Going through the archway is a squeezing that goes on. And in that discipline, a tremendous amount of freedom we get to experience. And that's what was going on with me. I didn't know it at the time. Oh, my God, this is too painful. Don't you love when you're about to collapse and your sponsor says, don't worry, you're having a spiritual experience. Click. When you're coming to Brooklyn. So my 7-step prayer says, my creator, I am now, right now, right now, willing, you should have all of me, good and bad, not for me to decide what's good and what's bad, but offer everything up to our Heavenly Father. I pray that you now remove, not me, but God, remove from me every single defective character, which what? Stands in the way of my usefulness to you, Father, and my fellows. My 7-step prayer has very little to do with me, but everything about God and be a maximum service to him. What's ever left, I'm offering to you again. It parallels, it's almost an extension of our 3-step prayer. Grant me strength to go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. That bidding is preparation for step 9 with 8, 8 and 9. Living in the sunlight of the Spirit and growing understanding and effectiveness. 10 and 11. Take this stuff home, occupations and affairs, and work with drunks. What a good deal. I don't work 6 and 7. I'm not working on 6 and 7. I don't deal with 6 and 7. Each time I go to work, I get to visit 6 and 7. I work with some things called the 7 deadly sins. My sponsor turned me on to that, offering that stuff up to God. Allow me to be a lot more sympathetic and empathetic to drunks when they come to me with this stuff that's going on. And little by slowly, self starts to die. In making amends, and I won't get into amends because we're really short on time here. Maybe tomorrow morning I can touch on some of that. But as I make amends for the harms caused to others, it further deflates the defects of character. See, the more Spirit of God I'm filled up with, there's very little room for self and defects. Same thing with fear. Oh, I have this fear. I have this fear. I have fear of relationships. I have fear of work. I have fear of this. I was shown how to do the opposites of fears. Fear of having no money. Let's write about fear of having money. Fear of not being in a relationship. Fear of being in a relationship, right? And is not fear just another manifestation of self? And isn't God greater than that? Why should I have fear? If I'm experiencing fear, is it possible that there's no God going on right now? And so we get moved past that. I can't overcome this on my own power, but God could and would if he was sought. God can take me past here where I currently am. Will move me past here. My intent is pure. Father, free me from this so I can do your work. Don't want to drink anymore. And little by slowly, we get past that. And you know who's aware of that before we are? Others. You see Joe? What's going on with him? Doing great. You see Mary? She's sponsoring 3-4 people. Something's going on. They know it. The light in the eyes is on again because the Spirit is awake. And then we move into 7. And that power that we get by just the first 7 proposals will move us into 9. We'll get more power that'll move us into 10, 11 with tremendous experiences. We keep working with 10, 11, and 12 to revisit the first 9 proposals, to kill off self, to get rid of some more ego, to have a new experience. And I wrote this on the board because a few people were asking about this lay aside or set aside prayer. Here it is. And I've worked with this through the first 5 proposals. This is not a requirement. Okay. And when I work with guys, I have them work with this prayer through the first 5 proposals. Just to kind of let's lay aside everything I think I know about this stuff. Because intellect will get in the way all the time. Everything that worked for me before may not work for me now. Just let's put it aside for a moment. If we have a bookshelf full of books on the top shelf, and I buy a few new books, what do? I move those other ones down, make room for new. Don't discard them, just make room for new. This vessel to be filled with the Spirit of God and keep refilling and waking up. That's all I got. Thanks. Say again? What about it? Yeah, that's right.
Now, the essential psychic change is when you start to change your motives.
Psychic change will do it. Yeah, essential means important.
Essential and entire.